speaks to life. Vision without sight.
The Light Watch Chronicles, Book 1, The Guardians, by J. H. Tepley, Episode 2. Produced and dramatized by Be Here. Chapter 3. Sovilluien Areto. The Council on Sovillo. The morning sunshine scattered into glitter on the dark ocean waters, quivering, quivering. The new day came dewy and fresh. Far to the north, a jagged mountain ridge gleamed white against the brightening sky. A great star sat in silence on the shore. Her commander's uniform in emerald and pale gold contrasted with the radiance of her wings. Lustrous hair of midnight silver flowed down her shoulders and flowed in the breeze. The stillness wasn't soothing. It teemed with danger, heavy like a tempest cloud. Something was looming ahead, drawing close, morbidly dark. Antares tried to see it, and beyond it to the future, but the energy of time swirled into hazy coils, giving no answer. Finally, the great star sighed and opened her eyes. Ocean waves ran up to her, bowed, splashed, and drew back, the calm before the storm. She rose reflectively to her feet. As soon as that, the intent of another reached her mind, unheralded yet welcome. Antares half smiled.
Cano,
she said affirmatively into the crisp morning air, even before she could see him.
Indeed, my lady.
A male voice sounded behind her, deep, sensual and commanding. The gravel crunched under the visitor's boots as he approached the guardian of time past.
Well met.
Antares turned to him. A swarthy warrior stood by her side, his burly arms crossed on his chest. Crimson and leather, his uniform had seen better days. A weight of jet-black hair, shiny as polished rock, reached almost to his wings. The star of the underworld was grinning. Green flames danced in his gaze.
Well met,
Antares greeted him.
Only 2 centuries and you're missing me already?
Cano gave a quick chortle.
Every day, how could I not?
He favoured Antares with one of those typically roguish smiles of his.
Always the same, are you?
Semper eadem.
Cano nodded.
I happened to be nearby and thought I'd personally...
I know,
Antares said mildly, but then her gaze hardened as she read his unspoken thought.
You came with the news.
That's right. A mighty task was laid on me.
Cano's voice turned ardent.
I'm a harbinger of the news. A messenger of gods.
Antares shook her head with vague amusement.
Cano, for light's sake, what gods...
I don't know. Some gods. Whatever.
Cano shrugged with a smirk. He paused and his tone turned serious.
Sirit is calling a council,
he said.
Yes, I expected she would.
Antares's amber eyes narrowed into slits. The shadow, she thought. She could sense it stirring, readying for a strike, billowing restlessly for some time now. Sirit is calling a council. The guardian of the future never did it unless danger was close.
I will join you shortly.
Cano nodded again.
See you on Suilo. Vale et lux tecum. May the light guide you.
And you.
Antares echoed, pensive still. Cano saluted and was gone. Antares remained, alone amongst the gentle lapping of the waves. The seahawks glided through the wind, chasing each other. Behind, a citadel of white stone towered on the hill, a cascade of stairs and pillars. Stained glass and fountains glimmered in the sun. The great star's hand slowly curled into a fist. Bright streaks of light ran down her arm and fingers. She realized why the council called for her. Servillo, the world in the care of the Guardian of the Future, had served as the Septenary's gathering place for so long that the beginning of the custom had been lost to the ages. In this pre-dawn hour, the majestic vastness of the Conclave Court was misty and still. In its midst, an eternal fire burnt, crowning an ancient tripod. Stray motes of gold floated around it like stardust. The pillars at the court's outer edge were mantled in shadows. A grand septagram was chiseled deep into the ground, its lines traced with pale blades of shine. 7 high seats of polished stone, one on each ray of the star, girded the fire. Sirit presided in the east, with Regulus to her right and Cano to her left. Antares faced her in the west, flanked by Famaris and Aratron. The empty seat in the south belonged to Venant, the reticent and mysterious guardian of eternity.
I did ask Venant to arrive at once. I might have just as well said not,
Regulus said, her eyes grey as mist. The Star of the Present wore robes in white, ochre, and gold. Her platinum wrist guards were chased with sigils. Sleek tresses in the colour of wax chestnuts scattered over her pauldrons and large white wings. A power, fearsome and beautiful to behold, the light of the great stars filled the court with radiance so bright that night turned into day. It was their true guise that the Septenary showed to no others. The lesser minds would be too easily smitten and blinded by it. For them, the guardians assumed the cover of smaller stature, nearly human, a mere reflection of themselves. That kindness wasn't without a price, though. Suppressing the light felt suffocating. It was like running with no air to breathe. Of the array of reasons why the Septenary evaded minor stars, that was one. Meanwhile, thin wisps of indigo swirled over the southern seat, lengthened and congealed, and, at last, Venant appeared there in a long cloak chased with gold. Her face was covered with a hood. The Guardian of Eternity favoured the gathered with a silent nod and lifted her gloved hands. One gold, one blue, gesturing for the council to begin. Sirit rose from her seat. The first ray of the morning sun broke from behind the horizon just then, casting a glowing outline on her wings and hair. A set of golden keys gleamed on her belt, bright against the carmine of her robes.
Amai oe septeris verai.
She greeted them. The words in Ai sounded solemn and grave.
It is not often that I summon you all, and rarer still for a quandary of this kind. Troubling news has reached me, with Vanand's help, which you too shall know. Time is changing. Before long, our unity will be put to test, and hard will be that test indeed. The shadow plots to break through the gate of the past, to obliterate the knowledge of the light so that it can spread untamed. Without the memory of their truth and what they fight for, no warriors can stand. If darkness were to be the only thing they could recall, it would consume their minds. The shadow's victory would be absolute. There would be no one who could rise against it.
Antares said nothing, only narrowed her eyes. Sirit continued.
This scheme has cost the enemy a great deal of toil. They are not ready yet. We have time, albeit not much. Antares' source luminary, Alpha Scorpii, is going to be the primary target of attack. The enemy expects that if the Guardian is destroyed, the gates of time would be thrown open.
How do we stop them?
Famaris gave Sirit a sharp look. The Star of Space was clothed in shades of green and aquamarine, A brass circlet tamed the gentle waves of his bright hair.
They have accounted for that we may try,
Cirit replied.
The Shadow Forces have been gathering power and building up their numbers in the greatest secrecy. There exists a chance that we could repel the first blow, but only to face another shortly after. That strategy would drain our resources and weaken our armies. It's just the exact trap our enemy hoped that we would fall into.
What then?
Kano frowned.
Our only other chance would be to find someone to decoy them. A star strong enough to appear as a guardian and divert part of their forces. We could then handle the rest.
An emissary guardian?
Yes, someone who could shoulder Antera's duty as well as keep the gate closed if...
Cirit hesitated.
If the need arose.
Kano breathed out slowly.
That's quite a task. Who could do that?
Let's hear what Antares may suggest,
Cirit said.
Our mission seems quite fortunate in this respect.
Antares gave a mirthless smile.
You all know that I am two in one. We could use the other polarity of my essence, my male form. If there was someone who I could bestow it to...
She continued non-committally.
We would have two guardians, just as your plan suggests.
But of course...
Kano clasped his hands and locked them together.
Simple and neat. The exact answer that we needed.
The Star of the Future regarded Antares with a long look. Kano's excitement didn't rub on her.
And who do you reckon could fulfill that task?
She asked reluctantly, in her heart already knowing the answer. The Star of the Past didn't respond at once. For a moment, she gazed into the distance, her lips set hard. A sudden, suffocating wave of grief washed over her. She fought it off.
You know what I'm going to say.
She turned slowly and fixed her luminous eyes on Cirit.
The only one who could shoulder this mission would be my Vega, if he were with us.
Vega's envoy never returned to life since the Battle of Daravaeg centuries ago,
Regulus said with a sorrowful note in her voice.
And he's still not here at present.
Cirit nodded mournfully.
I know.
Perhaps there is a way to bring him back?
Aratron asked. He glanced at Cirit and then at Antares. The Star of Heaven rarely spoke in words. The music of his voice was overwhelmingly hypnotic. His crystal blue eyes and long hair, white as frost and crowned with a platinum circlet, would have looked ferocious if not for the kind and serene expression on his face. The passing centuries had not changed him, and yet, despite the youthful appearance, he appeared ancient in his majestic turquoise robes.
He will return in the future.
Cirit looked up, reading the timelines in her mind.
A while from now, and briefly, like a flicker, three minor dark stars will have set up a deadly trap. He'll see the final fight on the blue planet before silence embraces his soul once more.
Where is that?
Kano asked.
The Laniakea supercluster, Virgo sector, sector Q, 250X3156TG.
Famaris's gaze focused.
The lower outskirts of the Milky Way, huh? Which part of it?
Orion Arm, System G, 5X38BR6, 10DXII20B.
I see. Let me guess. The third planet there?
The third from their luminary, yes.
Cirit said.
Locally referred to as Blue Planet.
Just as I thought.
Famaris crossed his arms.
I know it somewhat. It is peculiar, to say the least. Its power attracts all sorts of eyes. The shadow is particularly strong there.
Wait! Nullo intellego.
Kano interrupted.
I don't understand. What, in light's name, was Vega doing there, of all places? And how could someone like him be seized by just three miners?
It wasn't his decision,
Cirit said.
Over 1,000 years will have passed since the Gate of Time past being closed. Vega will have lost the memory of who he truly was. He couldn't use his power if he didn't know of it.
A strange expression flicked in Antares' gaze. For a while, everyone remained silent. Finally, Aratron spoke again, slowly, weighing every word.
We could intervene.
In theory, yes.
Sirit wrinkled her forehead.
The cost of the operation makes it not feasible, though. The inconsistency in time would be already hard to cover up.
All other stars of time nodded in agreement.
The paradox would be too glaring, but the colossal energy blast that comes with it would be much worse. Nothing can mask an outburst like that. We may try to synchronize it with a supernova, I suppose. But even then, the smallest error could betray our plans to the enemy. We can't afford a risk like that.
And we can't afford to leave the gate unguarded.
Antares parried.
It's not the only price.
Sirit warned.
You know, if you could change the flow of time, you'd have to offer yourself as an anchor. And if you save his life that way, it would mean a complete entanglement. A son of his son. A shadow of your shadow.
Don't.
Antares winced.
I know the rules. They are of no concern. My life and Vega's are connected already. You know that.
And you must realize that we could merely rescue him and nothing more. We can't force him to remember. He is not the star you used to know. He would not be able to join our fight or lead an army. He wouldn't even recognize you. Restoring his full memory may take time. Not even I can tell how long.
Antares shook her head.
He will remember,
she insisted.
He's one of us.
Shall we fail to wake him up on time? The gates of past would be left open to the shadow. The catastrophe would sweep across the worlds, devouring thousands of years and thousands of souls.
There's no need mentioning it, Sirit. I'm aware.
Antares cut her off. Her face was stern.
You speak like there's a better way you could suggest.
Only that you may choose a different star.
Sirit lowered to her seat.
For example?
There are many generals we could call upon. Speaker, or Lanx. Or perhaps Arcturus. He would likely accept.
Arcturus is too far. And too young. Neither Speaker's nor Lanx's power would suffice.
But interfering with the flow of time...
Critical situations require critical solutions.
We cannot take a risk of this magnitude.
A note of frustration broke in Sirit's voice.
It's borderline insanity. You're sure there's no one else?
I'm sure.
Antares paused. Her amber gaze was calm and sharp. The energy of time was speaking through her now.
I'm not a child. I would not take this most uncertain path or risk our missions for some petty reasons. Look into my heart and you'll see the truth of my words. We need Vega. Not because of me. He is the only one who has the strength this task calls for. The risk of bringing the right guard is less than the horrendous price we would pay for a hasty choice.
Sirit nodded. She steepled her fingers, deep in thought. Antares' single-mindedness was both admirable and troubling. Did she know something that the rest of the council didn't?
It's not an empty hope,
Antares said, responding to Sirit's thoughts.
Vega is one of us. His memory may falter, but his essence hasn't changed. I trust his light.
I still think we need a backup plan.
Regulus interjected cautiously.
We cannot blindly bet everything on this one faint chance. Maybe one of us, Famaris or Aratron.
Aratron shook his head and Famaris did likewise.
Just like before, I can't accept this duty.
Famaris stated firmly.
The frequency of that gate is unfamiliar to me. The connection would be too weak. Space is my domain, not time.
Assigning the wrong guard would be little different from having no one at the gate at all.
Antares observed.
You and the council asked for my opinion. You have it.
A heavy silence fell after her words.
Thank you for your thoughts.
Sirit spoke finally.
I did consider other strategies as well, and some safeguard measures, just in case. In case things turn awry.
Do share,
Kano said.
The Shadow cannot see too far ahead. Regardless of how this situation unfolds, we can use it to our advantage, even if the coming battle may be lost. A new operation at the second half of time would bring Antares Luminary back, with even greater power than before. The Sword and the Crown will herald its return. This is a set point in the future.
Right. Well, if Antares becomes any more powerful, the Shadow shall be in real trouble.
Kano smirked.
How do we do it, though?
Through Acalia.
One of those force vaults?
Precisely. We would do with that enormous power on our side.
No, please don't tell me.
Kano scowled.
Not being fixed stars again.
It is but a temporary price.
Cirit told him.
We did that once before.
Regulus glanced away, recalling a distant memory.
But RX-1125R7T041X05 is no longer there.
Correct. Although that wouldn't be an issue. For this operation, I suggest the third planet in the system, G5X38BR6 10DXII20B.
What?
Despite the gravity of their situation, Famaris's eyes squinted in amusement.
The one we just spoke about?
Yes, it's the clearest point of projection of the big plough in that part of the galaxy.
Fair enough.
Famaris held back a snort.
The universe has a sense of humour. What are our chances?
1 in 3.
Cirit replied.
The highest odds we've been comparing to all other paths that I could see.
1 in 3.
Famaris echoed thoughtfully.
Not bad. We'd retrieved your source luminary with less than that.
But how would we assure it works?
Regulus objected.
Without Antares at the gates of time, we would be in as much danger of losing our memory as everyone else. What if...
I thought of it already,
Cirit said.
And the promise has been made, in a true plight. If our sight were darkened by the Shadow, the Mirror Maiden shall restore our true consciousness.
The Mirror Maiden?
Regulus's eyebrows went up.
Very well. If Vaksha has stepped in, I have no more questions.
It took the most exceptional state of affairs for the mysterious guardian of the mirror time to intervene and make her force felt in the mundane world. She was the only guardian who had the power to revoke or change any decision made by the other seven. Antares spoke again.
The second half of time is a long wait,
she said. Grim fire kindled in her gaze, but her voice showed no sign of disquiet.
Someone must guard the gates and keep them closed in my absence.
Cirit frowned and interlocked her fingers, her face darkening.
And we are back to point zero,
Kano commented, leaning back in his seat.
We need the help of someone who needs our help. And if we let him die, we'd have to go into that death rebirth rigmarole. All of us. And it can take centuries. I appreciate the irony. I really do.
There may be something yet,
Famaris suggested, undefeated.
Something we have not considered. Perhaps Vanand can see more than we do.
His gaze swept the council and turned to the cloaked figure in the south. Vanand tilted her head contemplatively. She seemed to be here and not here. The energy of transient time swirled around her in coils. After a pause, the Guardian of Eternity gave a gentle nod. Her right glove glinted in the morning light as she reached for the hood covering her face. No words were spoken, and no words were needed. Vanand's eyes, pupilless and dark blue, already had the answer. Chapter 4. Devagari Aina. A Fading Light. Not even in my sleep can my heart find a rest. On this spring night, trapped in my dream, all I can see are cherry petals falling, falling. Oshikochi no Mitsuni.
Can't shake off the weird sense that we're being watched.
Asteri rubbed his neck as he glanced behind again.
You know what? I'll go check that spot.
Whatever.
Tay seemed too weary to argue.
Just stay visible.
Aye, Captain.
Asteri tossed the phone in his hand and slid it into his back pocket.
Be right back.
They watched him walk down the alley.
He seems even more reckless than Tay sometimes. In his own way.
Hegel mused.
Has this staying alive or safe meant nothing to him? How can one be like that? I can't understand how his mind works. Probably never will.
Hegel shrugged to his thoughts.
Light preserve him.
He looked up at the sky. The scattered clouds were traced with a gleaming outline.
Shall we return soon?
He asked Tay.
Or do you reckon it's better to wait until dark?
The captain didn't respond. His gaze, absent, fixed blankly on the fountain rippling the surface of the pond. His energy was cold and despondent like a winter night. There was no doubt Tay was thinking about her. After Morionwe, they agreed to never mention it again, to pretend that nothing ever happened. Hegel kept his word, but Farian and Nesteri both happened to be remarkably bad actors, it turned out. Their disdain got the better of them more often than every now and then. Hegel couldn't help but admire Tay's humility when faced with their jests. He regarded his captain silently for a few long moments. Secret sympathy kindled in his heart, unsaid. The pain of loss was something he understood too well.
Daydreaming, huh?
Hegel asked softly.
I'm good. I was just...
Somebody just admonished me to leave the past behind.
I know.
Tay closed his eyes.
It's only right. And trust me, I try. By the light, do I try?
He dropped his head.
It's all right. You're stronger than that.
Thanks, Hegel.
Tay gave him a weary smile. Was he really stronger? Tay wasn't sure.
Shall we?
Yeah, let's go.
Tay got up. He looked ahead, searching for Nesteri. Nesteri sensed his gaze and turned around, ready to walk back.
Hey, you win. I didn't find any...
Before he said another word, five men emerged briskly from the deepening dusk. One jumped from the back to lock Nesteri in a chokehold. The rest blocked the pathway. All five wore the familiar high-collared jackets, long and black. In a split second, the warriors swung sharply to the side, turned, struck the attacker from the right and threw him down. Before he knew it, Nesteri was holding the guy to the ground, ready to break his neck. As soon as that, he felt the cold touch of a weapon at his head.
Bravo!
One of the men behind him applauded slowly. His voice dripped with ridicule.
But not good enough. Now, let him go. Up, up!
Nesteri reluctantly got back on his feet. Two men grabbed him and twisted his hands backwards, while the third one tied up his wrists.
You two, come here, hands behind your back.
Another voice ordered to Hegel and Tay. The quarter recognized Ito. His face still bore the marks of the earlier fight.
Don't try anything stupid or he's dead.
The older man, who clapped, turned to Ito.
You were right,
he said.
Sending an Oni on them didn't work, but simple measures can often succeed where all else fails.
What's an Oni?
Tay heard himself asking. Ito ignored his question. Nesteri lowered his head to hide an awkward smirk. He was supposed to report the Oni incident at the cafe and the fight on his return. Well, he didn't. Conflicted as he was about it, letting Tay know would likely mean a ban on solitary walks. The little luxury he'd hate to lose. Nesteri bit his lip. Following the rules had never been his forte. Tay approached sluggishly, frantically thinking of different strategies in his mind. Hegel was silent. There blatantly wasn't any room for peaceful negotiation.
What do you want from us?
Tay threw at the men darkly.
Quiet!
The older man barked. A soft swish reached Nisteri's ears just then, elusive, a shadow of a sound. The warrior would have thought he had imagined it were it not so close. Another swish came immediately after, and then another. One by one, the attackers staggered and slumped to the ground like puppets with their strings cut off. Nisteri's eyebrows went up, but there was no time to wonder. Whatever it was a dream chance. He used his power to burn through the fetters on his wrists, then rolled and stood by Tay and Hegel. The group of masked figures soundlessly moved in twilight around them. A new danger. The quarter took their fighting stance. To their surprise, the strangers disregarded them entirely, focused on their own mysterious business. Two, squatted by the Progress Inc. members, and definitely pulled the little darts out of their necks. The rest carried the limp bodies into the shrubs. One moment, and the path was empty. Finally, one of the group approached the quarter.
"You must be skilled," he said. "Since you sensed our presence despite the masking shields, you deserve my respect."
He bowed lightly.
"Your shields? Who are you?"
Tay asked, still on his guard.
"Shinobi,"
the man said.
"And on Miyoji, some of us."
He smiled, a dangerous smile under his mask.
"It doesn't matter if you can't keep secrets. Nobody believes you."
Those words meant nothing, but Tay decided to let it slide.
"Why did you help us?"
"We did not. You were bait. We followed you from before. We have our own business with Progress Inc."
"You killed them?"
"We helped them sleep. They will be useful to us."
The man measured the quarter with a careful eye.
"I wonder who you are, foreigners. If one of you..."
He pointed at Nisteri.
"Didn't sense our presence earlier, I wouldn't be talking to you now. You must be some kind of Onmyoji too, I take it."
"Is that someone who fights with energy?"
Nisteri asked.
"Amongst other things."
"Then yes, I guess. It's close to what we do."
"Thought so."
The man nodded.
"All right then."
He stepped away and merged into the shadows. His people were already gone. A string of sideways lamps lit up, spilling their milky glow on the empty alley. From its further end, a lonely office worker came, lost in his thoughts, and passed by with tired steps. Swift and silent, the warriors left the park. Rush hour came with a stifling mess of crowds and traffic. Above the sluggish river of red car lights, the sunset opened its flaming wings.
"Using their carriages may be risky right now,"
Tay observed.
"They seem like a perfect trap."
Nisteri looked around and then across the road.
"We can walk. I don't sense anyone following us."
"Even if they do, it shouldn't be hard to lose them. The locals are blind in the dark, and it's not far."
It truly wasn't far, even despite the roadworks that added to the distance. Behind the strapped barriers, a group of helmeted workers talked over a chart under a lighting tower, their voices drowning in the noise of drills. A man with a flashing baton by the fence bowed and waved to move along. The quarter hurried their step till the jarring noise faded behind. Nisteri stopped by a vending corner, his face illuminated by the electric glow.
"Anyone want anything?"
Tay shook his head.
"I want food. There's that good little place nearby. Let's go there first."
"Sure, I don't mind. Tea would be appreciated,"
Hegel said. Nisteri took a bottle of tea for Hegel and a matcha latte for himself.
"Here you are."
"Tokyo has the best food,"
Tay said dreamily, clearly inspired by the thought of dinner.
"With you on that?"
Nisteri responded, gazing at the long straps of neon signs. He cracked a smile at the sight of Hegel's sulky face.
"It's all right to like new things, you know,"
Nisteri told him.
"It's beautiful here, when it's not raining. I've never seen so much light at night."
Hegel shrugged.
"Whatever you say."
The towering cubes of living blocks were here and there mixed with the visions of the past. Quaint wooden houses, complete with the perfectly shaped trees and tiled roofs. Plants in small pots and a patch of the starry sky above. They spoke of unknown magic, valour, purity and silent strength. a spell so similar to the old Crow Shrine.
I must admit, I do feel different about this planet now that we've met their warriors,
Tay said. He twisted on the spot and sent a blow towards some imaginary target to ease off his impatience.
They seem to know their craft.
Nasteri nodded.
I was surprised when that guy recognised us. I mean, recognised us for who we are. That never happened once since we've been here.
I wonder.
Tay's gaze went thoughtful.
If we could get to talk to them. They didn't seem to see us as their kin, but maybe we could bargain.
You mean offering our skills? Yeah, why not?
With their help, I'm sure it won't take long to find him. They are local. They must know more than we do.
Hope brightened Tay's face. In an instant, it spread to Hegel and Nasteri too, a warm sense of relief. They did it, all three felt. They had finally found the answer.
We shall research those Omniogis then.
Hegel smiled lightly.
Let's go,
Tay commanded.
No time to waste. Get food, then start as soon as we're back.
Aye, Captain.
Nasteri took the last sip from the paper cup, scrunched it, then opened a map on his phone.
It's over that way.
He waved his hand. The stars walked past a little shrine with strips of white paper trembling over its gate, passed under a motorway, then finally turned into a smaller side street on their left. It was empty and quiet, overshadowed by the large grey cubes of an old hospital, strewn with no entry signs. The building stood derelict and dark. In the last of daylight, the large blank windows gleamed like empty eyes. Hegel winced. In Venthmarion, they would never allow a house to decay into a corpse like that. It was a wonder how much difference energy sensitivity could make, he mused. Speaking of which, the warrior took a deep breath. Something didn't feel right, and it wasn't just the decrepit walls. There was something else there, dense, quivering in the air. The star called on his extended senses.
I have a bad feeling,
he muttered.
What?
Tay asked. He walked slightly behind.
Could be the demonoid screens, but I'm not sure. Feels different somehow.
Hegel answered without turning his head.
Let's hope it's not.
Tay snorted.
I never thought I'd ever say that, but I've had enough adventures for today.
Tay, you all right?
Nasteri chuckled.
You feeling well? Your health is my responsibility, you know.
Nasteri, shut up.
Let's leave the street just in case.
Hegel suggested.
See that road up there?
You're right. Let's do it. It does feel heavy for some reason.
Before he could say more, an unseen force knocked Tay to the ground. Energy fetters, strong as iron, cut into his skin. He realised what it was too late. Tay jolted and writhed in an attempt to break free. Damn! Nasteri cursed through his teeth, trying to break the net, but its grip only tightened.
Leave me and fight!
Tay ordered him.
I'll find a way.
This time, the enemies were three. The quarter recognised Fatial in his long leathers with dark metal clasps. Cold hatred glowed in his eyes. Another Darkstar stood by his side, wearing the same attire but nearly a foot taller, with an aloof expression on his face. His head was long and hairless, with chiselled features as though made of stone. Only his eyes glistened with life. White on white and red-rimmed like the rest, startlingly bright against his slate-grey skin. The third was a wiry stranger in an onyx cloak. His hood hung low, revealing nothing but his pointy chin and strands of sallow hair. The cursed symbols on his belt and arm guards exuded poisonous force.
Dolgjiv Commander Moriel Arkash,
he announced with a crooked smile, taking his hood down. A heavy signet ring gleamed on the pointing finger of his bony hand. His derisory gaze swept the quarter.
Just so you know, who had the pleasure of relieving this world from the scum like you?
Although not old, his face was lined and haggard, oozing the grim air of superiority. He looked uncannily Silterianese, except for the abyss-black eyes with bloody rims, typical of a dark star. His voice, disturbingly smooth, bore no trace of an accent.
off with the curtsies. Just squash those worms.
Fatial said brusquely in dark speech. The grey demonoid tilted his head and suddenly smiled, showing rows of serrated teeth. Fatial nodded in Tay's direction.
Your fight is over, losers.
He jeered in his faltering Silterianese.
I don't think so.
Hagel threw off his jacket, taking a fighting stance next to Nesteri.
Cute.
Moriel sneered.
You bring back all the joys of kindergarten. You're 2 against 3 in case you somehow failed to notice. I reckon the triangle attack was the one and only trick you had up your sleeve. Oh, do correct me if I'm wrong.
His lips curved in a fiendish smirk.
Spare us the hassle, kids. Submit before we make you to...
Shut the hell up.
Nesteri's voice was ice.
Even the two of us can kick your ass.
Pathetic.
Hagel heckled.
You came to have a chat?
Die!
Fatial snapped, attacking as he stood. Hagel swung aside, and the purse stream of fire missed him, thundering into the wall behind. Shards of glass flashed in the air. Bricks, stones, and dust blasted to all sides. The fence flopped to the ground, a crumpled pile of cinders. The Darkstar looked around, trying to locate Hagel through the dust. That pause was his slip. Tarry, and you are dead. A moment later, a blue flame hit Fatial's upper arm, singeing his hair and burning his lower neck. Another half of an inch towards his heart would have been lethal. A dark red stain showed on his uniform, spreading slowly like in a bad dream. The demonoid hissed with pain and lashed out again, more ferocious with anger. Block, parry, and evade. Evade, block, parry, parry. Nesteri was fighting two at once in an incessant dance of life and death. Lose your focus and you are dead. He had no chance of striking back, not once. Nesteri's only shield was speed. The enemies were taking time to wear him down. He knew. Slow down and you are dead. Two near misses left his body strewn with injuries and cuts. His torn shirt was spattered with blood. He didn't even notice. Evade, parry, block, evade. The wreathing net of purple flames forming overhead was just the opportunity Nesteri needed. Quick as an arrow, he leapt towards Grey, taking him by surprise, then tumbled and rolled off to the side. The energy net clung to the demonoid, pinioning him. Stop and you are dead. The next moment, Grey reeled at Nesteri's blow and collapsed to the ground. Dust clouded his fall.
-1.
As soon as that, an ice-cold blast from Moriel froze Nesteri's right arm.
Sly bastard!
Fury swept across the demonoid's face.
Just you wait. I'll make you squeak.
His new attack was a scorching hell, burning and stinging like 1,000 wasps. Moriel threw his left hand forward, forcefully drawing Nesteri's energy and absorbing it into himself. Nesteri clenched his free hand into a fist so hard the knuckles whitened, but he remained silent. Moriel's mouth twisted into a wry smile. He could kill the Light Star right away, but what fun would it be? Not yet, not yet. He looked around for Fatial. Fatial was a sorry sight. He was too slow now, lethally slow. His end was a matter of moments.
Disgraceful,
Moriel spat out in disgust.
And you two call yourself warriors? Idiots! You've turned being useless into an art. Now, watch and learn.
The Dark Star raised his hand.
Hagel, behind!
Nesteri yelled, all too late. Moriel's attack hit Hagel in the back and blasted through him with the agonizing cry of pain. Swept by the blow, Hagel's body hurled and smashed against a pile of debris. Sand and dust shot up and settled around slowly.
You didn't have to interfere.
Fatial cringed, spitting out blood.
I was doing fine.
Moriel snorted, the corner of his mouth suddenly twisted outwards, sprouting four fleshy mandibles covered with teeth. The demonoid gave a hissing laugh.
A good joke, I'll give you that.
Aegal!
Faltering from pain, Nesteri ran over to his battle brother. He didn't have to look to know there was no hope. Hegel's light hair was glued with blood, his eyes cold and blank, half open. The blow had ripped his middle body into shreds. What remained of his arms and shoulders was one dreadful, lacerated wound.
Hegel!
Nesteri jerked his head up, searching for Tay. Still in his shackles, Tay lay motionless and limp, pale as leaves withered in the northern gale. Thin rivulets of red laced his lifeless face.
Tay,
Nesteri whispered on the trail of his breath, blind with grief. Moriel watched, openly amused. He checked the battlefield, regarding the prostrated Grey's body with perfect indifference.
One should end the game before it gets dull,
he lectured Fatial. His face returned to its previous form.
Shall I do it? Or will you?
Fatial didn't respond. Gripping his right arm, his lips set in a tight line, blood seeped down his neck and through his fingers. The ghost of a sardonic smile twisted Muriel's lips.
I see you've got some funeral arrangements to make. Very well. I'll do it.
Nesteri glowered at his enemies, ignoring the tormenting burn of his wounds. He got back to his feet and straightened. For a moment, it felt as though some heavenly power filled him and helped him up. A trickle of ruby drops spattered the ground. The star clenched his teeth. His right arm served him again, he realized. Moriel's spell was wearing off.
Good timing,
Nesteri thought with a distorted grimace for a smirk. He knew his journey had come to its end. The clouds on the other side were calling for him with the voices of his brothers. Taking at least one demonoid with him would make it a respectable score. Nesteri raised his hand. His body disobeyed against his will. The world plunged into suffocating blackness. The warrior staggered and dropped to one knee, struggling for breath.
There won't be any problem with that one,
Moriel observed nonchalantly. A strange expression flicked on Fatial's face. A distant memory, ghostly yet raw like a slash, haunted his mind again. A memory he failed to banish no matter how he tried. The vision of a different fight, so long ago, yet so uncannily close. Disarmed and thrown to his knees, he stood before his enemies then, just like Nesteri now. Fatial wished for death. He called for it in vain. The dark stars took his soul instead. Existence crumbled into an abyss of pain, the torture that had never stopped until his consciousness was no more. Strong gusts tangled his hair. Dark, auburn back then, not yet red, and the howling wind echoed with the cry of endless sorrow. For a fleeting moment, an unexpected light, as though a glimmer of compassion, flashed in his eyes. Fatial looked away. Calling on all his will, Nesteri forced himself to stand up again. An acrid shadow of regret passed through his mind, a life that could have been. As though, through the mist, he saw Moriel's hand rising for the final blow, the demonoid's lips moving with words he could not hear.
So this is what death is like,
he thought, now strangely calm, before death darkness swallowed all around.
To life. Vision without sight.